there's something in it for everybody. There's something in it for the homeowner, something in it for the service people, something in it for the builders, and it's super easy to use. There's no learning curve. Our tech writing team was like, I need a menu structure. I'm not going to give you a menu structure. Why? Because it's right there. It's right in front of you.
Awesome.
There's no hunting and pecking. You don't need to figure things out. It's easy. We overuse the term game changer. Oh, it's a game changer. But in this case, it really is a game changer. It's very rare to come out with a product where people's eyes just light up. And this is a product where people's eyes light up and go, oh, this is awesome.
Welcome to the Pool Chasers Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Villafana, joined by my co-host, Justin, the Bearded Plumber Bowie.
That's right.
And today, we've got a very special guest all the way from California. Got Steve Jones of Fluidra. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me here.
So where about in California are you?
So I'm out of the Carlsbad office, and we're in North County, California.
Coolest building. I went there, I think, maybe a year or so after they moved in, and that place is unreal. I probably ran into you, but it's been so long now. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember when you guys were there.
Yeah.
There was a buzz in the building.
Oh, there was a buzz in the building.
The pool teachers guys are here.
No, we have video cam. It was all official. Yeah, good times.
Yeah, no, it's cool. We have a great lab set up, and it's really cool.
So what are we talking about today?
Jandy has done a lot on the pump brand side the past 4 years. If you were somebody who was looking at Jandy products 6-7 years ago, the pumps we offer today are significantly different. Wider range of pumps, higher horsepower, lower horsepower. We now have a new onboard controller, which people for years have been begging us to do, and we've resisted. And we finally came to the table, listened to the people asking the questions, and have delivered a new pump controller for them.
Bit the bullet.
Yeah. Yep. You guys got a lot of new cool stuff. Look forward to talking about it. But, you know, we want to learn a little bit more about the man, Steve, here. So how exactly did you get into this business and when?
Yeah. So I am an infant when it comes to the pool industry. So you guys have been doing podcasts for almost as long as I've been in the industry. So I started in June of 2017 as a product manager. I've been in the product management business for 20, 25 years in different industries. Zodiac, before the Fluidra merger, Zodiac was in one town over from where I lived. Always heard good things about it. I heard a lot of good things about the CEO and had been trying to get in for about a year and actually gave up. And out of the blue, recruiter calls me up.
Wow.
Says, hey, we've got your resume on file from about a year ago. We got an opening that you might be interested in. And it was for a product manager for pumps.
That's a good message, you know, just give up and I'm sure things will go your way.
You can only try so many times.
I'm going to give up on this podcast right now and see if it gets any better. I'm just kidding.
I think I applied for 3 different product management positions and I never heard back. So
wow,
you can only try so many times, but they still have my resume and file and things worked out.
What were the other products you did management for before?
So I come from a firmware background. I majored in information systems in college, went to the University of Connecticut. I was actually a software developer for a number of years. And then, to be honest, sitting behind a computer and coding all day wasn't really my thing. I had a little bit of an early midlife crisis in my early mid-20s. Did a lot of weird different things that I won't go into. Got into customer service. And then from customer service, the company I was working for was a software company. And they had an associate product manager position open, just doing a software product. So I took that on, and it kind of grew from there. Other stuff I've been in, I was in the parking meter industry for 9 years.
Wow.
I worked for LifeProof, making waterproof phone cases for a couple of years. Ooh. From there, I did drive-through restaurant headset systems for fast food restaurants. So if you go through McDonald's, odds are you're using a product that I was involved in to some degree. In all the jobs I had, I learned a ton about plastic injection molding, embedded firmware, manufacturing, contract manufacturers, quality control in manufacturing environments, learned how to read engineering drawings. So everything I learned at the previous jobs I had in the different industries felt like a perfect little matchup when I came to Zodiac.
Right on.
And I think their big debate in hiring me was, well, he's been doing product management forever, knows how to be a product manager. doesn't know anything about pools. My experience in pools was growing up in Connecticut, we had above ground pools, 24-inch round. My dad took care of it. It was green or cloudy most of the time. We still swam in it.
Yeah.
Before the internet, you couldn't, learning water chemistry was, he had to try to figure it out on his own. So the debate was, okay, knows how to be a product manager. Can we teach him pools? And here we are.
You're still employed.
Still employed. So I'm doing something right. I hope.
Got it right.
What do you think were some of the biggest qualities you had and the things that you would learn from those other companies in transitioning into Fluidra?
Honestly, I think the biggest thing as a product manager is taking ownership. End of the day, if something goes good with your product, you're getting all the credit. Something goes bad with your product, guess what? You're getting all the heat. And there's some products I've done in the past that we took a lot of heat for. So I think it's that. It's listening to people. It's, yes, you're the subject matter expert, but a lot of people help you with that knowledge base. So it's listening to the people in the field. So as I was telling you earlier, I spent a couple of days before this recording just out in the field with our team here in the Arizona Phoenix area. I learned a ton from those guys.
Yeah,
so people are super supportive. The bend over backwards to help you, but their expectation is, look, I'm going to help you, but you need to retain this. You need to continue to grow in your knowledge. And that would be my advice in the industry, not just the pool industry. What I found unique about the pool industry is people are supportive. It's a friendly industry. I see service people helping each other out. I see builders helping each other out.
Mm-hmm.
You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. There's competition, but it's friendly competition. Very refreshing. A lot of other industries are very, very cutthroat.
Yeah.
So let's just jump right into it. We're going to be talking about, a few different pumps, and we're going to start with the SpeedSet controller. Before we get into some of the details of that, can you just explain to somebody that might not even know what that is?
Yeah. So, under the Janney brand, we call it a controller. Other companies will call it a pump interface. So it's for variable speed pumps. What's the difference between a single speed pump and a variable speed pump? Single speed pump, power on, it runs. Power off, it stops running. Variable speed pumps, well, what's the value is you can program to run slower speeds. You can program them to come on at certain times, turn off at certain times. You can program min-max speeds into the pump so that you can, if 3450 is too fast for that pump, for that pool, it might create a safety entrapment hazard, too much flow rate for the plumbing. You can set min-max speeds so that you keep it in a safe environment. No one can really override that. So all sorts of things you can program into the pump. The controller, the SpeedSet controller, lets you interface with the Janney pumps and program them.
Hey, what pumps can you use it on? Can you use it on like the full line of Janney pumps? Or
so any Janney pump. So prior to the SpeedSet, we had a controller called the JEPR. Mm-hmm. It was the first controller that Jandy did probably 15 years ago. It stands for the Jandy E-Pump Remote, JEPR.
Mm-hmm.
So it was only when Jandy only had the E-Pump at the time.
Yeah.
It was a remote pump. It was designed to be wired into the pump, put on a wall interface to interact with it somewhere. It is not the most user-friendly thing. So things evolve. Around 2014, we came out with the IQ Pump 01, which is mainly an app-based interface. While people liked it, what they didn't like about it is they had to deal with homeowners' Wi-Fi, which is something that we learned, I think, before anybody else, that like having the iAqualink app is a great thing. It all comes down to, is the equipment connected to the homeowner's Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
And if I'm a service person, it might be one of the last things I want to deal with. I don't want to deal with a connectivity call. I want to deal with a, hey, I've got a little leak over here, or I've got a problem over here. Our customers, we heard that loud and clear, and they said, look, we appreciate the IQ Pump 01 as an improvement over JEPR, but what you really need is you're the only ones that don't have an onboard controller.
Yeah.
So we listened, but you can take it. You can use it on any of our pumps from probably the E-Pump has been around since 2007. You could use it on an original E-Pump.
This might be a stupid question, but I assume it's a COM port that you plug
in. It's an RS-45 port. We call the red. If you, people out in the field, they'll say, what's RS-45? You say, the red 4-pin connector.
Gotcha.
Oh, got it. Okay. Yeah. So it's a little red 4-pin connector that plugs into the pump.
Okay. So got it. Okay.
Does Jandy have like a little museum of all the stuff you guys have done over the years? That'd be like really cool to see the progression from like the very, very beginning.
So we have a mini one. It probably wasn't set up when you guys were at the building in Carlsbad when we opened it up. But when you first walk into the building now, there's a little kind of storyline, not of Jandy, it's more of the Fluidra Zodiac story. We do have a display case. They got one made in gold. And it's in a display case.
So oh, that's
it,
awesome.
And it says the Golden Goose on it. So it was one of the first, you know, big money makers in automatic pool cleaning.
Wow.
So yeah, so it's a little mini shrine. It could be better, but we get a little setup.
Nice.
So what was the thought process behind creating the speed set? Why did, you know, you guys feel the need to create this?
Well, again, it was because our customers were telling us. We resisted. A lot of times you'll hear people from Fluidra and Jandy talking about voice of customer, and we listen to our customers. And to be honest, sometimes we don't. And this was a case where we resisted. We tried to get people to adopt IQ Pump 01, and it was just like, guys, it's not good enough. I'm sorry. You need something on the pump. Just do what everybody else does, because that's what the industry's expectation is. So while builders didn't mind a whole lot, we were really not making a lot of headway in the service industry. And the servicers are the ones who really wanted that onboard interface. As far as kind of the philosophy around it, when we decided we were going to do it, we had a lot of internal meetings about, look, are we doing a Me Too? Like, are we taking the JEPR and kind of putting lipstick on a pig and making it a little bit better and just slap it on there and calling it a day? Are we looking at what manufacturer one is doing, manufacturer two is doing, and just kind of like taking the best of what they've done? Or do we want to do something really world-class? So we decided we want to do something really world class. So we went to our CEO, Bruce Brooks. Actually, he came to us. He said, what do you guys need to do to accelerate our pump business and really provide more options to the industry? Tell me what you want to do. And the stuff we're going to talk about today, we had it all lined up and doing it in serial. Like, we would do the speed set first, and then we would do the 3.8 horsepower pump second. And then we would do the lower voltage, more cost-friendly pumps after that. And he said, well, if you do that all in serial, how long is it going to take us? Well, Bruce, you know how this stuff goes. It could take 6, 8, even 10 years to get through all of this. So what do you need to do it all at the same time? We're like, oh, okay, wow. This is a great, great thing for the CEO to ask. So he said, well, we need X amount of money. I won't tell you how much money we asked for.
How much?
And the reason for the money is we decided we wanted to go to an external design firm to help us with speed set, because we decided we didn't want to do a Me Too. We wanted to really do something special. And then we asked for, I think, 3 or 4 extra headcount just to help with the workload.
Tell us a little bit about the design, because it is pretty unique compared to, you know, other products out there. For anybody that hasn't seen it, you know, what does this thing look like? How do you use it?
Yeah. So first, if you talk about the pain points that people had with other people's interfaces, there were two main things that came across in all of the pre-interviews we did before we even started designing it. First thing people says, everyone's got this little display, maybe 2 lines, maybe 3 lines, but it's a kind of a cheap display. It's hard to read in sunlight because, you know, we're out in the sure. sun. And it's hard to read things if you know, take out your cell phone, try to look at it in the sunlight. It's hard to read your cell phone even. So said, give us something that has a big display that is easy to read, that's going to hold up in the sunlight. And the second pain point that people had, which was very consistent, was as you navigate through the menus, the menus are really confusing. And everyone has these left, right, up, down arrows. Mm-hmm. And they're tedious. There's click, 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 click. In order to navigate through the menus, we've got to pull out this map from the user guide, and it shows you all the different options. They're like, if you can make something that I don't need that, and it's easier to navigate, then that would be great. So give them a big screen, easy to read. We gave them something we've trademarked, a flywheel navigation dial. So a little turn and press dial, and that's how you interact with the controller. Yeah. Is you just scroll through the menus. I want to change this setting. Press the navigation dial, it takes you to that screen. Pretty much everything you need to do within any of the settings is all on one screen. There's a couple cases where you have to go one more layer deep. Our tech writing team got very frustrated with me when we started to write the user guide for it. They're like, okay, I need the menu structure. What do you need the menu structure for? well, everybody publishes a menu structure. I'm like, you don't need one. What do you mean we don't need one? Like, look, let me show you. You go in there and you go into settings and you're like, look, everything is right here. Mm-hmm. There's nothing confusing about it. I've gotten emails from our team out in the field. Hey, Steve, I'm going to forward you a message from one of my customers that wanted me to come in and give them a training on SpeedSet and train their staff. They hadn't really used it yet. And an hour later, they called me back up and said, hey, don't bother coming in. We just set up one of the pumps. We started using it. Everyone knows how to use this. This is so easy. Thank you.
Intuitive.
So it was a really cool experience. Just to, the design group, they didn't do it for us. They really steered us in the right direction. Our first meeting with them is we just did a, I don't know if you guys have ever been involved with this, we just do like a storyboard, and people say, they gave us a bunch of post-it notes. It was all remote. It was all during COVID. So we did this virtual post-it note session where we all just put on post-it notes, little one word, maybe blurbs. What do we want this controller to be? And there were two kind of extreme things that came out of it. Simple, easy to use, intuitive. And then the other side was powerful, full featured, those sorts of things. And you kind of, in your head, you think to yourself, how do I make this simple, easy, intuitive, but also make it do all the things that people need it to do in a simple, intuitive manner? And they helped us navigate through that, and all the way down to where the buttons are, what the buttons were named, the size of the screen, how the navigation dial worked. Just everything. It was a great experience. Probably if every new product development effort I've ever been involved in was as good as that experience was, I would be like the happiest product manager in the world. It was fantastic.
I was going to say, do they all know you're going to be getting credit for this? So it's like,
No. So when people do give me credit, I always just say, guys, if you knew the team effort that went involved in this. So I did about once every quarter, our company has a little town hall meeting. And it's internal. Everybody in Carlsbad comes into a big room in person. It's about 100, 120 people there. And then everybody remote in our remote offices in the U.S. are watching it through a video. And they came to me back in March and they're like, hey, Steve, you're going to speak at the next company-wide meeting and you're going to talk about SpeedSet. I'm like, oh, great. That's not intimidating at all. Thanks. This will be fun. It was actually really fun. But the way I ended the session was I had a credit reel. Here's everyone in the company who was involved in this product in some manner. And when I ran the credit reel, it was about 50 people long.
Oh, wow.
So it was, and I truly give credit to the team. It was a fantastic effort. Some of the features in there, I'll give you an example. One of the features is around security. Because have you guys ever had the experience where the homeowner goes into their equipment set and they change something and they totally screw
never.
Up?
Never,
right? Never happens. Out of the blue, it would be great if, remember when like Microsoft, there would be like a safe backup setting, whereas if you screwed something up, you installed a piece of software and something got screwed up, you could say, hey, go back to 3 days ago and restore my firmware or my operating system to where it was then. That'd be great if we did something like that. So there's a feature in there, which is if the homeowner calls you up and they say, hey, look, we went on vacation for the weekend. The kids were home. The kids at a party. Somebody messed with the pump and screwed it all up. Can you come look at it? Well, all you need to do is go into that setting and say, hey, revert back to 3 days ago.
And but you don't tell them that, right?
Don't tell them.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, I can do it. It's going to be difficult. It's probably going to be a three-hour deal.
Yeah, no, exactly. But that, you know, that we show people that at the trade shows and they just go, oh my God, why hasn't anybody thought of this before? But we were giving somebody a demo, getting their feedback on it. And just out of the blue, they said, hey, it'd be kind of cool if it did this. And you're like, so obvious, but not so obvious.
I don't remember that, do you? Is the controller always sold separate or are there pumps that have it already on it?
So it's optional. You can buy pumps with it. You can buy a pump without it. So for the builder market where people are going to be putting it, say, on automation, they may not see the value in it. Now, we've built some value into it, which I can talk about a little bit. But if you're a builder and you know you're going to be building a pool and you're going to be putting automation in, they may say, "Yeah, I really don't need it. I want to save the, it's about $100 difference to get it with or without." So they may opt to get it without. or you can buy it with. So right now, the adoption rate is starting to pick up. I think when we first launched it back in, we started accepting orders back in January. We launched, started shipping in March. It was about a 10 to 20% of people were ordering it with. It's getting up to close to 50-50 now. So the builders are starting to see some of the value in it as well.
Do you need an automation board as well, or can you just have the pump standalone with the controller?
It can just be a standalone pump. So say one of the big things about our Flow Pro lineup, our VS Flow Pro lineup, is the way the dimensions are on it. It can replace a lot of competitors' pumps. It comes with an adjustable base. For example, it can replace any Whisper Flow pump, any IntelliFlow pump.
You're talking about the controller?
No, the pump itself. So if you're pulling out, say a super pump, 2 horsepower pump, and you are going to put in a variable speed pump in its place, you could buy our 2.5 horsepower or 2.7 horsepower VS Flow Pro. Dimensionally, it is the same dimensions as the suction side port and the pressure side port, same dimensions as a super pump. So if you're pulling that pump out and has an interface on it, and it's just a standalone pump, you want to be putting a pump in its place that also has an interface. Before, the service people would say, I got to buy your pump, I've got to put that in, and then I've got to buy either your IQ Pump 01 or your JEPR. I've got to remotely mount it on the wall. I want it on the pump just to keep it simple and clean. So now they have that as an availability.
What are some of the other features of the controller besides kind of its new look?
For the immediate wow factor and the immediate I get it factor for the person experience and the usability of it, it's the screen and the navigation dial. But for example, you can position it in all four positions, 0 degrees, 90, 180, 270. You can rotate it, no tools needed. So when you install it and you want it pointed this way, just a little turn, twist, it twists off, put it in the new position, twist lock it into place.
Oh, wow.
So it takes 10 seconds. People love that. I mentioned there is a feature for the builders, which is we have an automation pass-through. So that red RS45 connector that we were talking about,
mm-hmm.
There's a second one on the bottom of the speed set controller. You can plug an automation into that. And what happens is the controller will say, oh, I'm getting automation commands. I'm going to stop being a standalone controller. I'm going to open up this gateway so that the automation system can talk to the pump. And you say, okay, well big deal. I don't get it. Well, we lock out everything on the pump or on the speed set controller except for the stop button. So if you're the homeowner and say you've got to clean the pump basket or you're the service person showing up, you don't want to deal with automation, but you know you've got to clean that pump basket. You can hit stop on the pump. You can do your thing. And then if you put the auto button, it goes back into its regularly programmed schedule and just starts listening to automation again. Or if you are going to add chemicals, if you just added chemicals, you can hit the quick clean button on the controller. It will run a quick clean cycle remotely or locally. And then when it is done, it'll go back and just automatically go back to listening to automation. So if I'm a builder, I see that as, look, if I have a service division, that's great for my service guys. And if I've got a homeowner that maybe I'm not too keen on them touching their automation system on a regular basis, maybe I'm like, hey, Mr. Homeowner, Mr. and Mrs. Homeowner, if you ever need to clean your pump basket or do anything just real quick, just hit the stop button, do your thing. When you're done, hit the auto button. It'll go back at listening to automation. So we've given people value. And then I mentioned that security feature. You can go back to previous settings. There's an additional security setting. We gave people two options. A lot of other companies have a 4-digit PIN. And what do people like about a 4-digit PIN? Well, I know there's always a back door. If I forget the PIN, there's always some kind of a hidden back door. So we have that, but we also added in this cool feature, which we call a long press. This is the design company we work with, had this idea. Well, what if you had to hold down the flywheel navigation dial to bypass the security to get into the settings, but it wasn't obvious? If you just pushed the dial, nothing happened. But if you knew, because you're the person who installed it, if you knew, if I press down on this dial and I hold it in for about 3 seconds, the screen will give you a little tell. It'll show you a little progress bar. You hold it down for another 3 seconds, it will unlock the settings that you're trying to get into. So a lot of cool little things like that.
Does it have its own app?
It does not. So there's no Wi-Fi, there's no Bluetooth on this. It is, we strictly said, again, for speed to market, we talked about, do we add Bluetooth and Wi-Fi into this? Does it replace IQ Pump? And we said, you know, we've got a product that does that. We've got IQ Pump. Why would we replicate that in this and add a lot of complexity, especially as we're trying to get to market? Our goal was get speed to market and get something out there. So it's been really well received.
So speaking of releasing it to the market, what is the overall feedback that you're getting? Good stuff?
Yeah, it's been really positive. We started showing it. We showed it at a Pool Corp retailer show early January. And then we showed it all the trade shows in the spring. And across the board, people would walk. We have two working pumps with them set up on it. We've got videos showing how to use it. And it was the busiest part of our booth. People would walk up and they would just go, like their jaws would drop. As product manager, I know the product managers at the other companies. They would come over, they would start using it. And they would just like kind of look over and go, thumbs up. Like, this is really cool. So it was really well received. Of course, with everything in the pool industry, adoption is always a challenge, getting the word out there. So we now have people, it's been almost an entire pool season that we still have customers of, we still have Janny customers that don't know that exists. And they're hearing about it for the first time, just as we kind of end this pool season.
Wow.
But people really like it. I told you about some of the emails we've gotten. I've got some of them clipped out on in my cubicle in the office. Lots of good feedback.
Nice.
I think one of the nicest things from a service industry, when I started people asking this question, I was actually just shocked at the answer. We would have service companies come in. This is when COVID started to clear up. We would have service companies come in and they would look at it and we get their feedback. And I would ask, I ended up just started asking everybody, hey, so how big is your service company? I've got 10 guys running routes. So of those 10 people, how many of them know how to program a variable speed pump? And they say two that really know how to do it. I got another guy that kind of knows how. So in a pinch, I can send him out. So that begs the question. All right, so you have to go replace a pump and you got to put a variable speed pump in his place. Can only one of those two or three people go to do it? Well, I might have somebody go install the pump. And then I'll send that person on later on to program the pump. Like, so you're making two trips out. You're spending gas. You're spending employee salary, labor costs. Those companies are like, I can train everybody how to use this in 10 minutes. And now that barrier of my labor force has now that barrier is gone because it's so easy to learn and use. And my team is now more productive. We had people who had JEPR controllers on their service routes, their first question was, so I can take those JEPRs and I can replace everyone with a speed set. And it works. I'm like, yep, doesn't matter how old the variable speed pump is from Jandy, it'll still work. We had people out of their pocket, service companies paying to replace the JEPRs on their service routes, not telling the homeowner, just going out and replacing them. So out of the gate, we had actually a pretty good spike in sales of people who were doing that. And it's a fascinating thing to when, if you do something really well, what the reaction can be to hear a service company just out of pocket paying for upgrades.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's super awesome.
Beats, like doing it over the phone or even when a homeowner calls and they need to make a quick adjustment. If you could just talk somebody through a few basic things, that's pretty nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's again, a lot of what we hear. I can now talk that homeowner through how to do it on the phone, saving me a trip.
So if there's one thing the pool pro should know about SpeedSet, what would you say that is?
I would just say that there's something in it for everybody. There's something in it for the homeowner, something in it for the service people, something in it for the builders, and it's super easy to use. There's no learning curve. Our tech writing team was like, I need a menu structure. I'm not going to give you a menu structure. Why? Because it's right there. It's right in front of you.
Awesome.
There's no hunting and pecking. You don't need to figure things out. It's easy. We overuse the term game changer. Oh, it's a game changer. But in this case, it really is a game changer. It's very rare to come out with a product where people's eyes just light up. And this is a product where people's eyes light up and go, oh, this is awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, it's definitely a fresh idea on what we do. Mm-hmm. I feel like there hasn't been too many changes, but this is a good one.
Yeah, I think the industry has looked at the user interface and the variable speed pump as a necessary evil. Give them enough to get by. And we had a similar attitude. going through this was very eye-opening.
All right, we're going to switch gears a little bit here. We're going to talk about new pumps, which is very exciting to me. So you guys have some new pumps. You already had a lot of pumps, but you came out with some new products there. So what are they, I guess, first, and then what's the reason for bringing these out?
Yeah, so there's actually two. Let's talk about the 3.8 horsepower pumps first.
Okay.
So we, the highest horsepower that Jandy went into in a residential space was 2.7. We have kind of pitched, and I actually do believe this, being in the industry for 6 years, I believe that 2.7 is probably the most you need for the majority of the pools out there. Mm-hmm. But we know there's a very popular 3.95 horsepower series out there that a lot of people have the philosophy of bigger is better. And the reality is sometimes you actually do need the bigger. So people would buy two 2.7 e-pumps to run, say, a negative edge pool. I think the trend over the last 10 years in the industry has been, we may not be building as many pools, especially if you look at the COVID years, how things were going, but that the average price point has gone up. People are building bigger, fancier, more expensive pools, more water features. So we looked at it as, you know what? Do we need a 4-horsepower pump? So we built it off of our existing design. So if you're familiar with the DV2A series pumps that we have, the DV2A is the extension on the end of the pump model, stands for dual voltage, 2 auxiliary relays. Okay. We launched that fall of 2019. It's our own motor design. We designed it with the help of an external company, found a manufacturer to make it for us. So it's our own design. Some of the features of it, so it basically dual voltage, so you can run our 2.7 and lower pumps. You can run them on 230 volts, 115 volts. Has two built-in 2 auxiliary relays. You can run other equipment. Our typical use case scenario is you can run it on a saltwater chlorinator and a booster pump to drive a pressure cleaner. So it's built off of that platform. The only difference is the 3.8 horsepower compared to the 2.7. There's no dual voltage. It runs on 230 volts only. If you ran it at 115, you just wouldn't be able to, you wouldn't get the power to move the water that you need. So we did it on our VS Flow Pro platform, and we did it on our e-pump platform. So both have two specific reasons. The e-pump is really big in the builder market. For those people not familiar with our e-pump, it's about 32 inches long. It's got a big wet end, largest smooth surface basket in the industry. So it's specifically built for a builder pump. Aftermarket, the only time anybody is going to be buying an e-pump is if they're replacing an e-pump from 10 years ago.
So wait, run because when Brandon, shout out Brandon, by the way, awesome. If you guys don't know Brandon, that's our local rep. He's awesome. But Brandon sent me over the brochures when it first came out. He said, check out these pumps. And I was looking at them, and as a plumber, I was looking at them mostly on like their production. They have similar productions, the e-pump versus the Flow Pro, right? Or at least it looked pretty close on the brochure. So what are the differences between those pumps?
As far as when you say they were similar, you mean the hydraulics, if you look at the pump curves?
Got
it. So the pump curves are pretty much right on top of each other. Mm-hmm. The difference is, from a hydraulic standpoint, that's one of my favorite things about being the pump product manager, is you're also kind of the internal expert, although I'm not professionally trained to be a hydraulics expert. Mm-hmm. I understand the hydraulics of things. So although both the VS Flow Pro and the pump generate similar pump curves, their use cases the reason why we did them both are very different. E-pump is a builder market. It comes with 2.5-inch by 3-inch unions. You should be using bigger piping on a pump that is moving this much water and generating this much head pressure. There's just really, really no two bones about it. Originally on the roadmap, we did not have the Flow Pro 3.8 on there. As we were developing the motor, conversation came up. Hey guys, we've been pitching that the VS Flow Pro drops in for IntelliFlow and WhisperFlow pumps for years. Why wouldn't we want to position this as something that can replace an IntelliFlow VSF? And the hydraulics side of the company said, well, typically those are on 2-inch plumbing. We wouldn't really want to be moving this much water on 2-inch plumbing. So why would we sell a pump that goes into that and position it that way? Well, the damage is already done. Somebody's already taken a 3.95 horsepower pump and put it on 2-inch plumbing. And So you're not going to make it any worse. And it gives people an option compared to the IntelliFlow. So, you know, oddly enough, we didn't do it because of this reason, but the IntelliFlow VSF, as people know it today, was discontinued. There's now the IntelliFlow 3. And if people need to pull the IntelliFlow VSF out, that IntelliFlow 3 is bigger. Mm-hmm. Larger footprint, is about 2 inches longer. The pressure side port, the outlet, is 2 inches long, offset from where it was. So we're, in order to get it to line up, you've got to cut plumbing off of the suction side. What do people say about the suction side? Well, if you've got 2-inch plumbing, you should have 8 inches on the suction side. Most people don't. So now you're going to ask people, well, take 2 more inches away in order to get this bigger pump to fit in. So it kind of nicely fell into place that we ended up doing the VS Flow Pro. It is a direct drop-in replacement. You got to use a small base with spacers that come with the pumps, but everything lines up.
But still a high head pump. They're both high head pumps, right?
Both high head pumps.
Same horsepower. So we're just talking about the wet end, like the frame, basically.
Yeah, basically different motor. The wet end is different, slightly different hydraulics. But yeah, with the 3.8, we're moving actually more water than their 3.95 did.
Mm-hmm.
We have some builders. I had this
real quick.
Yeah.
For people that might not know, what is wet end? What are you referring to?
Well. You want to hand, you want
no,
to tackle
you,
it?
No, you go. I mean, I'd love to hear how other people describe this stuff.
Yeah. So when somebody says pump, they're referring to two components married together. So when you look at a pump, it's built by the motor end, which is the electronic end that has the shaft that goes into the wet end. And the wet end is where the impeller is in the basket. So you got the wet end, the motor, together they're a pump. Did I get that right? Is that right?
Yeah. Great.
All right.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, but for other people that don't know, you know.
That's what you were going
to
say.
Some people refer to it as a volute.
I like wet end.
Wet end sounds a lot, rolls off the tongue better.
I'm going to be saying it all the time now. What's that, the wet end?
You're going to be looking for ways to work that in. Oh, yeah. Is that wet end okay over there? Or?
Yeah. So
we're not talking about the pump right now, dude.
So when we for people who come to trade shows or customers that aren't familiar with the J&D products, that's our pitch on the pumps is we got 3 different wet ends on the small, compact, aftermarket size pump is our VS Flow Pro. In the middle is our VS Plus HP. On the high end is the E-pump. It's really a builder pump. That's kind of like the 2-minute elevator pitch. Is the size of the wet ends.
Nobody asked me, but let me tell you why I think it's great. Because as a plumber, you know, the big thing about some of your competitors that had pumps at that size are, especially in spas, if we're trying to increase the number of jets in a spa, right? If you have a single dam wall spa or a 12-inch wall in a spa, if you exceed what you can get in production from one pump, you got to add a second pump. Well, now you got 2 therapy loops, 2 air loops, 4 suctions. So by getting a pump with more production, we use the bigger pump in a spa, we can get more jets. You got a single loop because you can put them all together. You don't have to do 2 zones of jets because you exceeded what one pump could do. I think those pumps are great for that reason.
So you would actually be saving the amount of pumps you would need to use in a certain circumstance where you would need to use.
Yeah. So, you know, if you look at like what you can get with 40 or 50 feet ahead out of a pump, and let's say it comes up short. You know, each jet needs 10 or 15 gallons a minute, right? And you're over what that pump can produce. You got to add a pump. But the problem in a spa is you don't have a place to put 2 air loops, 2 water loops, 2 suctions, you know, the whole 9. But then you step up to this pump, you know, that now you can just run your same 1 loop, size it correctly, and you can get it all in one pump. So
nice.
I think it's helped us a lot. I mean, you know, and I'm glad you guys are doing it now too, because I'm a big fan of them 100% for that kind of situation.
Yeah.
Which one's going in at your house?
I got the E-pump, the 3.8 E-pump.
Okay.
Yeah. So my general recommendation to people is, and this is when I trained our field team on these 2 pumps back in August, I want to say it was, I have a specific slide on the slide on the launch deck that we gave them, which was, you know, the VS Flow Pro should really be a specific use case of replacing an IntelliFlow VSF.
Mm-hmm.
This shouldn't be something that goes on a new build for filtration. It should be an aftermarket replacement of other pumps. Because if it is on 2-inch plumbing, that's really the only case you want to do it in. Is you've already got a awkward hydraulic situation. You're not going to make it any more awkward by putting this in. And it gives the industry another option.
Awkward hydraulic situation. I like
yes,
that.
You know,
you got an AHS.
I should trademark that.
I like it.
Awkward hydraulic situation.
You're going to see that on my Instagram soon. I've come upon an awkward hydraulic situation here, guys.
The wet end. On the wet end.
On the wet end. Sorry. I'm going to cut you off. Anyway.
There's going to be some new t-shirts out of this.
I like that. Yeah. We'll credit you, though. We'll credit you.
That's all I ask. I took a first aid class 20 years ago. And it was a part of the first aid class where they're teaching us how to do chest compressions when somebody's dying.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody asked the question and to the instructor, what if I break their ribs? And what do you think the instructor said? He said, they're already dead. If you break their ribs, they're not going to know. And if you save their life, they'll have a couple of broken ribs. You can't do the compressions too hard. Where I'm getting at, this is a really weird analogy, right? Is he ended that with in any first aid situation, you do the best you can with what you've got to work with. So if you're an aftermarket guy and you've got to go in someone's backyard and replace a pump, you're not going to replumb the whole thing. You're not going to say that's done wrong. Cause we all see those backyard pools where it's a 10-year-old, 15-year-old pool. Maybe the original builder wasn't that great, didn't do a great job. A few different service people have been in the backyard. They didn't do some great jobs. They've kind of Frankenstein all the plumbing together. You're not going to make it worse. So we're giving you a solution with the VS Flow Pro 3.8, where if you've already got a larger horsepower single speed pump or variable speed pump on there, you're not going to make it worse than it was. So why not offer it to the industry?
Love it. So what was the acronym, DVS, dual voltage?
So the DV2A is for dual voltage, two auxiliary relays.
Oh, okay.
And we came out with a new lineup called the dual voltage series.
Okay, so that's this Flow Pro DVS. Yeah. You got 1.3, 1.65, and a 1.85.
Yep.
Right? Okay.
Yep.
So can you explain to us the difference between those three? I mean, obviously, they're different horsepowers, but can you break them down?
Yeah, so look, they're all the same wet end.
Right.
They're all the same volute.
They would all respond to an HS situation, same.
That's what I was going
to
say. Yeah.
So there are existing wet ends that we already sell in some form, whether a single speed form or a variable speed form. But for example, our 1.65, we sell a 1.65 today, mm-hmm. 230 volts only. You can't get it with a speed set pre-installed. The manufacturer is discontinuing the motor line. So our existing 1.65 is going to be going away in about 6 months. This is a dual voltage, so specifically for the 1.65, for example. It's a hydraulically equivalent pump to what we sell today.
Mm-hmm.
Differences is dual voltage, and you can get it with a speed set controller pre-installed. Same price. So there was people like, oh, so you're going to get rid of your existing 1.65, you're going to charge me more for this new one.
Yeah.
No, we're giving you more for the same amount of money. On the flip side, we have a 1.85 VS Flow Pro today, which is a 1.85 horsepower pump. It's the DV2A version with the two auxiliary relays, has a lot of convenience features, bells and whistles on it. It's some people say, well, I don't need those bells and whistles. Is there a way to save me some money? So we did a 1.85 dual voltage version of this, about $100 less than our existing 1.85 today. So in that situation, we're giving you the same hydraulic package, taking away some features that you may not need or want, and we're saying, look, you got an alternative. You get the premium 1.85 DV2A version or the lower priced economical, I guess you would, is a good term. I would, maybe a better term is value, because it's full featured. There's another manufacturer that came out with some really low priced variable speed pumps, but they're kind of handicapped. They don't work as true variable speed pumps. There's a lot of things you can't do with them that other variable speed pumps can do. And then looking forward, there's probably some new regulations coming up four years down the road where single speed pumps probably are going to go away completely. And that 1.3 horsepower VS Flow Pro that we just came out with will be very popular with smaller basic pools. You got to replace a one horsepower single speed pump on the market. That'll be a great, great cost solution.
So you say these do or don't come with the speed set controller?
They're all of them have an optional speed set.
Okay, got it.
Yep,
got it.
So for example, here's this is our naming convention. I don't know if people care, but we try to make it real straightforward. So every pump of Janie's that begins with a VS is a variable speed pump. Our wet ends are FHP for Flow Pro, PHP for Plus HP, SHP for E-pump, then the horsepower, and then the extension on the end. If it's a DV2A, it's a dual voltage two auxiliary relay platform. If it's a DV2AS, it includes speed set. Now with these new pumps, if it's a DV, It's just the dual voltage version.
No speed set.
If it's a DVS, it's a DVS with a speed set. And then the 3.8 horsepowers, because they are not dual voltage, but they do have the two auxiliary relays. We made it real straightforward.
Someone needs to take notes on this.
It's just a 2A. So it's a 2A or a 2AS.
Okay.
So we try to make it make sense. It makes complete sense in my mind, but so do a lot of other things.
Is that, having not any experience with those dual voltage ones, is it like a jumper you have to move?
No, completely auto-sensing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you just wire it up?
You just wire it up.
110 or 230 and you're good.
And if you wire it up wrong, it will be like, just going to do nothing because I don't want to break myself.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it's pretty foolproof.
Nice.
So
what happens if, this is probably a very what if, but what happens if you got 230 and you drop a leg? Does it just shut off or does it pick up the 110 leg and keep going?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know.
Because we've gone out on pumps like that before and we're like, oh, they wired it. You know, a leg shorts out or something.
Yeah. I guess
it would lose a neutral at that point. So
this would be my guess, but don't quote me on it. My guess is that because it was running at 230, it would probably fault out and just not run. Now, if you were to power cycle it,
it might detect the 110.
It might default to the 110.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, the other nice thing, you bring up a good point. People always say, well, what happens when I run my pump at 110 on the, you know, I got this DV2A pump. If I'm running at 115, do I lose anything? So if you look at, the awkward hydraulics, our pump curves, whenever you see a pump curve and there's a dotted line that kind of goes below it, below the solid line, that is usually our 115 volt pump curve.
Gotcha.
So what happens is the motors are designed to run at 230. It's designed for a certain amount of amperage. If you go to 115, you're basically, generally you're doubling your amps. Well, because we don't design the components to run at full power at the higher amperage, above 3,000 RPM, we've got to kind of slow the pump down to protect itself.
Gotcha.
So that dotted line is, if you run at 115, above 3,000 RPM, this is the performance you're going to get. That's different.
I see. Interesting.
So if you compare, we call it D-rating. If you compare our D-rating curves to other pumps on the market, we D-rate significantly lower than anybody else does on the market. Our 1.85 DV2A model actually doesn't D-rate at all. So if you buy that in the aftermarket, you're a service guy, you know you're going to get the same performance at 115 or 230. Whereas look at competitors' curves, you'll see that 115-volt pump curve. It's a lot of times somewhere like half of what you get at 230.
Wow.
So it's a...
Never paid attention to that, but I'll have to look for that.
Yeah. I guess I'm guessing you guys don't have a lot of 115-volt around here, though.
No, I mean, back, you know, 10 years ago when I was in the field or so, I would see it every now and then, but no, not a lot.
Yeah, it's geographical.
South Scottsdale.
Is there? Yeah, yeah, I could see that. Old Town Scottsdale, especially.
That's what we hear about. Like, there's a pocket of Orlando that has a lot of 115. There's a pocket in Tampa Bay that has a lot of 115. Northeast 115s everywhere. So it's something to be aware of if you're a service guy and you're pulling out a single speed pump. Most single speed pumps, actually, I can't think of a single speed pump that doesn't operate. If it runs at 115 and 230, it's usually the same performance at both.
That's awesome.
But variable speed is different, so you guys just got to be aware of that when you're kind of doing your swap outs.
Nice.
Kind of off topic a little bit. Well, not really, but how difficult is it? Is it super expensive? Is there a lot of work into converting like a full house property from a 110 to a
210? Well, yeah, you got to get another 110 leg off the pole, right? So you got to bring a whole nother, you know, power block into the panel. So you'd be switching the panel out, and then, yeah.
Not easy.
Unless you just switch a bunch of neutrals over to a 110 leg, and it's a big deal.
Okay.
You're asking a plumber, by the way, so I don't know. Somebody should fact check me, but yeah.
Yeah, and that's always the debate too, right, within the industry is, ideally you always want an electrician doing it, but you tell the homeowner, hey, I've got to have you got to bring an electrician that's going to cost you like, I'm making up a number, it's going to cost you $1,000. Can you just do it? And, you know,
yeah,
a lot of people just kind of wing it. right, wrong, indifferent.
Hey, I learned electrical by doing it.
If you don't get electrocuted and nobody dies, everyone's good.
My dad always said, just work with one hand in your pocket and you'll be fine.
Never heard that. That's pretty good.
So Janny's positioning these pumps as value focused.
Yeah, it's value. It's about price value. The regulations from 2021, what's nice about them is, I'm not a tree hugger, but I do like to be environmentally conscious and aware. And you kind of see the logic behind it. Being in California, everyone makes jokes about brownouts and blackouts, and we haven't had one in I don't know how many years, but it's still the joke.
Yeah.
But you know, on those hot days in the middle of summer when it's 100 degrees, you know that there's a chance that, hey, your AC is going to get, your whole house is going to get a blackout and your AC is going to shut down. And they send out alerts. Can you please turn your air conditioners down and things like that. So you understand the desire to get variable speed and mandate variable speed. At the same time, you gotta appreciate the position of homeowners as well. All right, my single speed pump crapped out. It was, you know, a new motor, $150 labor, or a new pump was $400. Not the end of the world. Now that $400 motor craps or pump craps out, and you're mandated to put in a variable speed, and it's $1,500. It's a bit of a sticker shock. So you appreciate that side of it as well.
Sure.
So our thought on the dual voltage series was either give them a hydraulically equivalent pump of what they can get today at a lower price, or give them more for the same price. And that was the whole idea.
That's awesome. So altogether, how many pumps are you guys offering right now on your pump line?
I want to say it is 9 different variable speed pump models across the 3 wet ends. We got our wet end bingo
going
on.
Yeah.
9 different pumps across the 3 wet ends. But since they're both available with and without the speed set controller, total of 18. And then there's 4 pumps that we offer today that we're going to be phasing out in the next 6 months to a year, because the motor's been discontinued. And those are all, and on all 4 of those, they're getting replaced by the DB series.
Okay. Are they being discontinued because of the DOE stuff, or is it discontinued just not going to manufacture them anymore?
The manufacturer is discontinued. It's older technology, like I said. So we have a VS Flow Pro 1.65 today, but it only operates on 230 volts.
Gotcha.
We have 115 equivalent of that only operates on 115 volts. So if you're distribution, if you're a service company and you're kind of stocking a handful of pumps for different situations, well, you had to stock a 115 volt version and a 230 volt version. Now you just buy the DV equivalent and you're good to go.
Nice.
So the DOE regulations that came out required manufacturers to indicate a WEF score. How does this factor into installation decisions, and how does this affect manufacturing decisions?
Yeah, so in the industry, we acronym that to WEF.
WEF.
The WEF score. What's the WEF score of the pump?
What does that mean?
It stands for weighted energy factor. So this is a four letter word in our industry, at least in our building, it is. I have some of our regional managers for the field teams. They ding me a dollar every time I say WEF in one of their meetings. So what it stands for, weighted energy factor, the DOE intended it to be like the equivalent of miles per gallon to automotive vehicles, which I think that started like in the 50s or 60s. So every car manufacturer needs to publish this miles per gallon, just for the consumer. Their idea was, if the consumer understands what that number means, then they can make a more educated decision on buying a pump. So what it means is, you will typically see, and we're required as a publisher, as a manufacturer, to put that on our marketing materials. It's on the pump carton. It's on the pump itself, a WEF score. And it will say something like 8.2. What that means is multiply that by 1,000. So 8.2 times 1,000 is 8,200. It means for every 1 kilowatt of power that pump consumes, it can pump 8,200 gallons of water. So if you compare a pump that has a score of 7 to a score of another pump that has a score of 9, the score of 9, you can pump on average 2,000 more gallons per kilowatt hour of energy used. Right. So
are there other things on the home that have WEF scores? Is that something people would be familiar with?
Well, there's energy
with?
Guides on all of your appliances.
Yeah, it'd be similar to the energy guide. Like if you get a new water heater, hot water heater, or a air conditioner that has that yellow chart,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it says you should expect to pay
energy savings.
This how the issue
annual use.
Yeah, cost. Annual use cost. Yeah. Exactly. So it's supposed to be like that. Here's the danger in that number, and this is why I say it's kind of like a four-letter word. And before I get into it, the other purpose of that number is, as the DOE evaluates single-speed pumps and variable-speed pumps, depending on the hydraulic horsepower of the pump, different than motor horsepower, but every pump has a hydraulic horsepower number. Depending on the hydraulic horsepower of the pump, it needs to meet a minimum WEF score. And if the WEF score of the pump is below their chart, then you can't manufacture that pump. So I'll be honest, on a couple of our single-speed pumps, when WEF came up, we had to change a couple of things on the motor, in motor efficiency, to improve that WEF score to get it above the pass line.
What is that? What's the minimum score?
It depends. It's every pump is unique. So
depending does on Black and Decker, does their pump meet that?
You know, I'm gonna be honest. I'm not sure they even publish it. So one of the things about all the new regulations is it's kind of a self-policed industry. There's not like WEF police going out there. There's not DOE police going out there and saying, oh, you're manufacturing a pump that you're not allowed to manufacture. So we have reported a handful of companies to the DOE. There's a hotline you can call. There's an email address you can send in. And there's a lot of kind of, I think the sad part is the industry learns the hard way, or homeowners learn the hard way. Hey, look, there's a reason why there's three major manufacturers and a couple of mid-player manufacturers that we trust as an industry, because there's always these little cheap players kind of coming in the market.
I want to get a motorcycle and a mustache and just be the WEF police and just ride around town popping people.
So I'm not going to say Black & Decker is a good example. Black & Decker is potentially an example of they're not following the regulations. I'm not saying they are or not. I can't remember off the top of my head.
But it comes with a blender and a drill.
And when they came out, look, I got to be honest, they're inexpensive pumps. When they came out, we got some heat from some service people of, hey, did you see those Black & Decker pumps? And we're like, yeah, we saw them. But what do you think of them?
That's like a toy.
It looks like a toy. It kind of feels like a toy. If you do your homework and you look up where it's made, it's a cheap manufacturer that they're just private labeling it to Black & Decker. God, I hope the Black & Decker people don't come after me. and they private labeled the name Black & Decker to slap on this pump. And we have people who have tried them. We said, okay, let us know how it works out. And he came back a year and a half later.
It's on fire.
Oh, man. Exactly. They're like, that was a mistake. Now I got to put a Jandy pump in. So you learn the hard way. So back to WEF.
We're dead.
back to WEF. It was it had twofold. Again, it was miles per gallon comparison to a car for the homeowner to make a better buying decision, and it was to the pass and fail. Is this pump a legal pump or not a legal pump? The analogy that we came up with was, since they were using miles per gallon as their educating point to the consumer, we said, well, look, the better thing to do is people should be making buy decisions about their pump based on the hydraulics. What does the pump have to do? Do I have to move water and I've got to turn over two turns per day on a 10,000 gallon pool? Pretty straightforward, pretty easy. Or do I need to run a negative edge 100 feet on a 30,000 gallon pool that also needs two turnovers per day? Do I have a big waterfall I need to power? Or is it just like a little trickling waterfall? So we have come with the analogy of, like, you got to pick the pump that's going to do the job. You shouldn't be picking a pump based on a WEF score or an energy efficiency score. Because the reality is, a variable speed pump, any variable speed pump can save a homeowner the same amount of money if you program them properly. Back to the car analogy, if I want to go off-roading, I want to go remote camping, I'm getting a 4x4. I'm getting like a Toyota Tacoma. I'm getting a Jeep Gladiator or a Jeep Wrangler, something that was designed to do the job I want to be doing, right? I'm not going to buy a Prius, right? I'm going to buy the Prius. I'm going to go try to do that off-roading, and I'm going to destroy my vehicle. Same thing with pump. You try to put a smaller pump that maybe have a better WEF score to do some of that stuff, and you're going to
You're focused on the wrong thing.
Yep, you're focused on the wrong thing. Yeah. Flip side, if I've got a 200-mile commute, 100 miles each way, and I'm tight on money, I'm buying that Prius because all I got to do is get there, get back in the cheapest amount as possible. So that's always my pitch to people. I see danger in a homeowner making a purchasing decision on something that they don't understand. It'd be like me going to my backyard and, oh, my air conditioner crapped out. What am I going to do? I'm going to call up my local air conditioner people and say, hey, it's 15 years old. I think it has to be replaced. My first thing is, what do you recommend? They're going to give me a recommendation because I don't know what I'm doing. I would expect to think the same thing as a homeowner. My pump is bad. I got to get a new pump. Mr. Pool Professional, what do you recommend I put in its place? I don't know of a single person that has ever made a buying decision based on WEF, but it's there. One of the major manufacturers out there has actually been using the WEF score in their advertising. Our pumps have the best WEF score. They're the most efficient. So if we kind of segue back to those D rating curves at 115 volts, mm-hmm. that's where they're getting their highest WEF score from. It's not the 230 volt WEF score. It's the 115 volt WEF score. And the reason why the WEF score is so high is because they derate so much. They're not moving much water. They're not consuming very much electricity. So, hey, I've got this great WEF score, but when you run at 115, you're not moving a whole lot of water either. So it's also something that's a dangerous thing that because people don't know about it, can somebody take it and kind of twist it around? And I think one of the DOE's intentions of the new regulations that went into effect in 2021 was to make it more straightforward. But there's some loopholes in it that let some people kind of twist how people use it. So we publish it. We don't really talk about it, except for here. So
recorded
it's,
forever now.
Yeah. So it's something that I say it's a number that's used for regulatory purposes, and here's what it means. But you really shouldn't be picking a pump based on that. You should be picking a pump based on the hydraulic challenges you have.
Yeah. So what does the future hold for pool pumps? Where do you see the industry going?
So for pool pumps specifically, I kind of see it as price versus features. And I think you're already seeing that. You're seeing that some of the stuff that we were doing, you're seeing that some of the stuff our competitors are doing is, like, I can give you an inexpensive variable speed pump, but there's not going to be a lot of muscle behind it as far as bells and whistles. On the flip side, you have more expensive pumps with the Tozer relays, more expensive controllers on there, things like that. So I think there's going to be three markets. There's going to be the market that people know today and have been known for variable speed pumps for the past 10, 15 years, kind of the sweet spot. And then there's going to be the full featured, ultra featured, high end variable speed pumps. And there's going to be it's called D featured, inexpensive variable speed pumps. So it'll be something for everyone. It really depends on, again, what's the need for the pool. Every pool's different. Some people are going to get away with those D-featured variable speeds. Other pools are like, no, I need the whole shebang high-end stuff. Now, what that means, lots of things could go on. We've got some things in the works that I can't go into, but some cool stuff that we're developing that, knock on wood, we're still proving them out, see if they work. So some good stuff coming.
What is it?
I can't tell you.
Should have got it.
What if one of these days someone's just be like, all right.
God. It's all WEF related.
It's all WEF.
Better be on the wet end. I'm telling you right now.
Hey, I had a question earlier. I forgot to ask. You mentioned that it's a 2.5 by 3 inch union on that e-pump, right? Mm-hmm. What's the? Is it a 2 inch union on the FlowPro?
FlowPro is strictly two inch slip.
No coupling over.
No coupling will not fit over it.
Okay.
So it's 2 inch slip fitting over. If you wanted to use it on a larger plumbing, you just need to do a 2 inch to whatever adapter.
A bushing.
And it'll work. And then the 2.5 by 3 inches, 2.5 inch slip or a 3 inch coupler.
Yeah. Is the basket in the e-pump bigger now, like as compared to the FlowPro? Is it the same?
No. The e-pump is significantly larger. Okay. I'm going to go off of memory here. I believe the VS Flow Pro pump basket is 120 cubic inches.
Okay.
The e-pump, I want to say is 200, but that might be low. It's the largest. We pitch it as the largest smooth surface basket in the industry.
Okay.
Some people might have matched it. I don't know that anybody's gone higher than that, though.
So is it like comparable to, I don't want to say their name on here, but the extra flow pumps from the Almond brand?
Yeah, they're about the same size.
Okay, I don't know what you're talking about. What company?
All right, fair. Okay. Got it. Right. I'm excited to get mine. Like I said, mine shipped out today, so I'll let you guys know. Maybe we'll have an update back on one of the next episodes.
Yeah,
of Justin's experience with the e-pump.
Yeah, this 3.8. You know, what's funny that some of the stuff is what people I get at least once a month in the office. Somebody will send me a picture of a pool, mm-hmm. say, "Hey, Steve, this is my neighbor's pool and need a new pump. What pump do you recommend?" And it's like, sorry, man, I can't, that's not enough to go on. What's their plumbing size? What pump is in there now? Are they happy with it? Were they happy with the performance? Are there any things that they want to, any remodeling things they might want to do? How often do they need to clean their pump, the pump basket size? How often do they need to clean their pump basket today? Because if you put in something with a larger pump basket, you have to clean it less, right? Or if it does get debris in it, it's going to go longer between cleaning cycles. So a lot of little things that people just you connect all the dots, and there's just so many factors that go into selecting a pump.
Everybody wants a quick pill. They just want a quick, just give it to me.
Yeah.
What do you recommend?
Yeah.
It's like you can't see it in the picture, but there's actually a lazy river that goes around the entire
property. Dude, that happens all the time. They'll give you 10% of the information and then blame you when it's wrong.
What the fuck, dude? That pump didn't do anything.
And as soon as I ask them for, hey, I need a picture of the pump. I need a picture of the pump model number. I'd like to see some of the equipment around it, see how much space they have.
They're gone.
Yeah. They are like too hard.
Yeah. Same people I know.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. This was a really fun episode. And we're definitely going to have a transcript with this for the video explaining
new acronyms.
Yeah, all the acronyms, translating everything you're saying. But I learned a lot. This was good stuff, and I appreciate your time.
No, this is fun. This is on my bucket list in the industry to come on and do this. And when Jackie asked me, "Hey, do you want to do pool chasers?" I said, "Only if it's in person."
Invite. Awesome. I've never been to the Fluidra because he went with the old guy, the old co-host. So now I need a trip out.
You need to come on out.
All right. I've never been to Carlsbad either, so I can knock out two birds, one stone.
When you guys come out for Western in March, come down.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. All right.
Any excuse. There we go.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us some feedback. We'd love to hear from you. You can find everything discussed in this episode and more in our show notes below or poolchasers2.0.com. This episode was produced by the amazing Kyle Auld. I'm Greg Viafania, and you've been listening to the Pool Chasers Podcast.